There's a rumble in the distance. Is it a storm? Is it train? No, no, it's the luscious, expansive sounds of Rolling Blackout's Coastal Fever with their third album in tow. This five-piece Melbourne band have long been known for creating their own vignettes of the world around us with their evocative and well-formed tracks through their two EPs and two records, Hope Downs and Sideways to New Italy. With 2 years of isolation, lockdown and uncertainty, the band has swiftly moved to a new long player with endless rooms and with it a whole new world to explore. We've got Fran and Joe from the band joining us here on the Tuck Shop today. G'day, guys.
Hey, Mick. How you doing?
Thanks so much for joining us here in the studio. It's always exciting to have in-person chats with all these Zooms and, you know, video chats going on.
Yeah.
And the fact that you're in Sydney is really, really great that you can come on in. So thanks heaps for that.
It's fine. Thanks
for having us. It's great to be here.
And the album, it's out. New album, Endless Rooms, third one's down. Congratulations on that. It's always must be that relief and excitement to have an album out in the world.
Thank you. Yeah, it is so nice having the tangible copy of it.
Yes.
Like, because it's this swirling tornado for a long time, you know. There's so many moving parts that just exist in your head. And then when you've got it in your hands, it feels really good.
Oh, for sure. And I guess there's a thing about the third album that I sort of think is the album that really sees bands often reach their full potential. You know, you got your first one, which is like the culmination of the start, and then the second one, sometimes you have that pressure of the second album syndrome. But I've seen bands do their third albums and all of a sudden feel like they can release and do what they really want to do. Has that sort of felt like that with this album a bit?
Yes, I think we fit that mold exactly. All the lead up to it as well. Yeah, we've just followed that classic path. But yeah, it feels good. With these songs, a lot of them were written without the direct intention to be Rolling Blackout songs, I guess.
Yeah,
they were just songs for song's sake. And then they were brought to the band as just like a let's sort of see what happens kind of thing. You know, we don't know if this is going to be a song or not, and we just jammed on the songs, and this is what we came up with.
The first time we were able to get together again after not being able to do that was like December 2020, and so Tom had we had a bunch of songs, but the songs that come to mind that were just sort of maybe Blackout songs, maybe not, were like Dive Deep and Tidal River. Tom had the beds of these jams, and like Dive Deep particularly just sort of was like this slow jam groove, but it didn't really sound like a guitar song. It was like mainly just a beat and his vocal and a few little guitar licks. But then when we were able to get back together again, it very quickly we started to make it sound like us.
It became a Rolling Blackout song.
It did. it is still a slow jam, you know, a slow groove, and so it's nice because without sort of the pressures of thinking about, you know, you have like this like little invisible analyst on your shoulder, I think, like it just develops over time. And when I think we didn't used to have it, but then you do now because it's just the fact of it. That was the one good thing about just like being unable to play and unable to see anyone. It's like, well, I'm just going to make songs for the sake of it.
And then
songs like Dive Deep, Tidal River were written that way, and then they became band songs later.
I'd love to explore a bit more about the making of the record in a sec, and I want to just rewind a little bit because I think people sometimes forget that Sideways to New Italy came out in the thick of the first lockdown in 2020, and what a time to release an album. Obviously, you know, not being able to tour it, and you've got a huge fan base overseas, not even being able to go overseas. What did you think at the time? What did you think was going to happen with that album not being able to tour it? Were you sort of, was it sort of crushing as a musician to not have that opportunity?
Yeah, but at that time, I don't think anyone knew it was going to go for as long as it was going to go for, as long as it went. Yeah. So it was like, middle of 2020, and we were like, we're not going to not release the record because that would be weird just to have a record sitting around doing nothing.
Yeah.
Like the music's there to be listened to. But then, it was a good year and a half later that now we're touring that record.
And is it weird now touring that record after having recorded a whole new one?
Oh, it's like, it's pretty good. It feels good. Yeah. It's like you're finally getting the release. Like the songs actually start to make sense when you're playing them again live. When you're playing them live, because that's when they come to life. Beforehand, it's just like they exist in a little lab or something. But when you're playing them and you're actually performing it, you hear the song differently and you see how people respond and you think of the songs differently. It's nice to finally get that.
We've given these songs their second life that they deserved.
Yeah.
And they were just sitting there dormant for so long.
That's awesome. To be able to sort of feel like you've given that second album, which deserves, you know, a huge tour, a huge heap of time, but you've sort of had this tour to give you that chance to sort of give that second album a go before the third one really, really drops. So that's really great to hear. Mm. Of course, COVID meant that, like you said, you were all sort of split up. It was isolation. You started working on your own music together. We've talked to a few musicians and artists who've said that COVID was great, or, you know, had a silver lining in that they were able to spend more time thinking about their music, deciding the direction they want to go, and spending more time on the sort of production of it. Mm. It sounds like you guys sort of are in that category a little bit.
Yeah, I think we didn't think about the production of it too much. I don't think, as we were saying, like it, these songs were just songs that we were going to go into the room together and sort of hit and hope. You know, like this may be a blackout song, or it may not be. So we didn't overthink it. I think we just tried everything, threw everything at the wall and see what was, you know, see what stuck.
Yeah, and one thing I think that was good. It was a totally different process to the second album. The second album was basically jams that were then wrangled into songs.
Okay.
Whereas the third album, we weren't jamming, so it was like you would tend to write a full song if you're sitting at the edge of the bed, or, you know, if you've got your little garage band going, you'll solve the puzzle yourself, and then you'll have a bridge in it. You know, like you won't just leave it just as a few.
Mm, you had to finish the song.
Had to finish it. So I think that a lot of the songs on this album had the DNA of a song before we were working on it, which is different to the second album. So
yeah, interesting. Do you think that'll change maybe the way you look at future albums as well?
I don't know. I think we've always sort of had those two different worlds between trying to wrangle a jam into a song, or starting with a song and then exploding it. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, maybe Hope Downs, the first record, was both
more songy. Oh. Yeah, it's probably more songy.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
I know.
We can discuss this later.
Take this offline.
So a lakeside Mudbrick house in regional Victoria is where you decided to record this album. Post Joe's family, I think, had it since the 70s or something like that. What was that space like? Can you tell us about how it felt, sort of regional? You had birds and trees and nature around you. Did that sort of inspire a lot of the feeling and the positivity from this record?
Yeah. We went in wanting to bring that space into the record. We knew that, like, it's a place that we've spent a lot of time at over the years, just going there to write and do demos and that kind of thing.
Okay.
So we knew that we loved it. We just didn't know if it was possible to make a record there or not. Mm. And it turns out it was. And so, yeah, that's why there's, like, little part, you know, like sort of, I don't know, field recordings of birds and things that we really wanted to bring the space into the record. But yeah, it was a great place to make a record, absolutely, yeah.
And just the setup of it was really good, because we could just pull bigger guitar sounds and more room sound as well, because it's almost open plan. There are a few little rooms with their own walls downstairs, but overall it's open. And it's on the cover of the album, that's where we recorded. So you can see there's this mezzanine upstairs, which we put all the amps up there.
Oh, really?
So the amps were just ringing around the top.
Wow.
And we had room mics up there. So a lot of Joe's leads are swirling, and, you know, songs like Dive Deep and Vanishing Dots. And Tidal River, so they've got big swirling leads. Mm. So
two amplifiers
ringing around the top of the house.
And that's awesome.
Downstairs, we had we were all in the fireplace room together.
Right.
But there was no amps or anything in there, so we were getting just the drum sound. So we had a big full drum sound.
Yeah.
And then we had the bass amp in a separate room. So yeah, we were able to pull big sounds.
That is such a cool way of doing it and recording. And you can hear the spacious and the expansive sounds on the record. And I had no idea that that's how he would have done it, but that's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the whole front of the building is a big glass window, essentially.
Yeah.
So it's got a very unique sound to that room.
Would have been a bit of bounce there, obviously. You know.
Yeah. We had to sort of figure out a few things about where to point the mics. But yeah,
sure.
It's certainly a unique sound.
So you really did take over this house for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kicked the residents out.
It was all ours for 2 weeks. And it was just great, like, waking up in the morning and just sitting around the embers of the fire from the night before and having a coffee and then slowly settling into the day and thinking about what feast we're going to have for dinner, you know, because generally, you know, not all of us will be needed during the whole day, so somebody will be on dinner duties. And it was
everyone went out. Yeah.
Was there like a property you could walk around to? Big area there?
Yeah. Huge, yeah. Oh, I mean, yeah, the property itself is pretty big, but you can just jump the fence and then go down to the basin, the Waringa Basin.
Okay.
It's this big basin.
Yeah.
Reservoir sort of thing with all these birds and, yeah. It's a very nice place to create.
That environment you were recording in is sort of reflected in that opening track of the record. Pearl Like You, you got that door squeaking, you got the birds, you know, it's like, you know, it's only like a minute or so that's that track, but is that sort of just like the introduction to the listener, say, this is our album, this is where we are.
Exactly, yeah. We had a fun night. I think it might have been the last night we were there. And it was probably 1 a.m. or something. And we were just sort of we had one of those portable Zoom recorder things.
Yeah.
And it was almost like this performance art or something. Like we were having that track played through the speakers really loud so it could be heard from outside, and then walking around the house and like recording the crunch of someone walking. And then it was completely a live recording of someone walking around the house and opening the door.
Yeah.
which we orchestrated all in one, in one go. It was pretty fun.
I've read you haven't done too much in the interviews I've read yet about this album, but there's been the talk of sinister and dark, and traditionally Rolling Blackouts have been sort of a sunny, bright, jangly guitar band, but this album's a little darker, I guess, in some tracks. I think some tracks are also upbeat and, you know, have a real bright old school feel, but the title track, Endless Rooms, I think does have that sinister sound to it. And it's got that line, sometimes strange things can happen. Where did the origin of this track come from? We're going to play it on the show, and I really want to get an idea of the feel that was coming into that song.
It's hard to say because Tom wrote the lyrics for that song.
Okay. So, yeah.
But I know that he said that it's about like touring life, which I know it was almost like a bit of a gag. He was saying that when you're touring, the thing that you're looking for is somewhere to lie down.
Yeah.
And so you're just like walking through these rooms, like, where is the spot that I can lie down? Which I think happens after about 2 months of touring. So that's where the origin of that line. But I unfortunately didn't write the lyrics, so I can't speak too much
about it. Fair enough.
Mm. But we can talk about the making of that, recording.
Yeah. But it became the title track of the record, like the name of the album as well. So,
The title sort of stood out to us really quickly, like immediately, because the Endless Rooms thing, and we were kind of, the way we were approaching all these songs were, it was as if they were all their own individual worlds. Mm. And we didn't go into this record trying to connect one song to another or trying to, you know, have any overarching concept. So they sort of felt like that we were just walking into a new room each time there was a new song, essentially. That was kind of the way we were in imagining
and trying to find a place to lie down.
In the end, well, that's all you really want.
But thinking of it like a dollhouse, you know, like just like separate things, we decorate them differently, which is always the way we're sort of really focused on songs. And we just didn't want to put too much pressure on trying to make it feel any certain way. But then I think it just did by reason of where we recorded it.
All I could do, stand and stare. Let's call it eternity, hung in the country. My words softly
Right there, we had Endless Rooms from the brand new Rolling Blackouts Coastal Fever record of the same name, Endless Rooms. Yes, it is a little bit darker, a little bit, you know, more bit of synth in there as well. And I don't know if we've heard much synth from Rolling Blackouts before. And I remember when the first single came out called Way It Shatters. There was a bit of synth in that one. And was that on purpose to try and get your fans to have a bit of a, an idea of where you might be headed?
It was to try and get big in France.
Yeah, that's right.
Apparently, well, not
if
disco
you don't
enough
a synth, for that. Yeah, no. You need a synth if you're going to be big in France. No, it just that was just a jam that I made up at home, and I think it was all... It was completely synth-driven, it was just, just all keys. And then we turned it into a guitar thing, but the keyboards playing that melody needed to stay because it couldn't be anything else.
Sure.
And we just made it work. It was one of those another one of those moments where we wasn't sure if this was going to be a Rolling Blackout song, but we... You threw it on the boot, and it is now.
And it landed. It stuck.
It landed,
went through the big sticks. I've sort of listened to this album trying to decide what I want to play on the show today, and you've got these really upbeat guitar tracks, which are really reminiscent of your sound from the last album particularly. But then you've got some sort of melancholic and darker songs, which I guess might be reflective of when they were written or where they were written. A bit like Open Up Your Window, which is only a couple of minutes long, but it feels like a real throwback to lockdown. And was that the intention?
No. Well, I showed my sister that song. She was like, "Oh, it sounds like it's written in lockdown." It wasn't actually. It was written just after we came home from tour in 2018.
Oh wow!
Yeah, it was in the family house.
There you go.
Yeah, I wrote it. Just like the day or so after coming home, where everything just sort of, I don't know. It just felt weird just being in the family house after having just been moving around all over the place.
And sure.
That song came out. It's been sitting there for a long time.
Oh,
it was originally a 7-minute song.
Yeah, yeah.
It becomes a 2-minute song.
Yeah, yeah. It's you know what? We can just cut all of that out.
Yeah. And
yeah.
The drum solo, though.
Oh, she was good. Yeah, we were just missing that.
Yeah. No, but that's... a lot of the songs do. They are influenced by, the circumstance we're in. We didn't want to, write a lockdown album. This song's called Lockdown Blues, anything like that. But, I mean, the fact is it really rearranges you, particularly for us as touring artists. It's such a shock, for everybody obviously, but it was a tough time, so that filters its way into the songs. But we didn't want to dwell on it too much and didn't want to make it too explicit, but yeah, it's fair to say.
Sure.
Yeah, maybe the melodies are just somehow a little bit darker or something. I don't know.
But it's great. I mean, it just shows, I guess, that you are progressing as a band and you're evolving, as we all do.
Yeah, you gotta.
But I still love that driving bass, which is always amazing from Joe. Especially saw you on the Eastern Beach. There's that bass at the start there. Just, killer. I can't wait to see that live as a song, but just, so many of these tracks as well.
That was Joe Russo's jam, actually.
Yeah.
Eastern Beach.
Right. So the bass, really.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because he the pedal, one of the pedals that he acquired during the time apart was that he had a loop pedal. He was living down at the beach. And he was just building these little pocket-sized symphonies, and that was one of them. And
loop pedals were amazing, right?
Yeah, yeah. But then, so he sent it out, and then Tom came over it with this, all the lyrics. Tom has a way of just coming out, just brrr, there's the song. So he did that with Eastern Beach. Oh, great.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Fun to play that one.
Bathed in the golden glow, everyone is on their own. Crumbling boardwalk, cruise ships are beached, tempers are shot.
pockets of love. Where did it all go? So, so, so.
Now, you mentioned the touring, and you mentioned the fact that you guys are a touring band. You're so used to playing gigs, like a lot of gigs. And, of course, that's going to be on the cards again. You've already got some shows lined up in England and Europe. I want to ask, after you've done a tour, do you go, oh, we're going to need to have a break, we're not going to do it for a while? Or are you like, oh, you're ready for the next time you do it? Are you still, like, keen to get on the road, even with all of the lack of sleep and the bad food and the, you know, on the road, like... How's it feel?
I mean, you sort of book everything about a year in advance anyway, so you know what's coming.
Yeah, okay.
But I'm always keen.
Yeah, I'm always keen. Yeah. I love it.
Travel the world.
Yeah, it's. Yeah. I've said it to the others a bit. It's like you get. It's just like you just hop into a shopping trolley and somebody else just like goes, whoa. Like, I don't know, because you just sort of, you don't have the, you know, control really, but it's just a nice thing to just go, right, where am I today? I don't know. But what are we doing? I don't really know.
Yeah.
Plug
just
in.
Get on stage and go. Yeah.
That's where you lift the guitar and go, hello.
Springfield.
Yeah, Springfield. Yeah. Exactly. But where in particular around the world do you look forward to playing? Like, where is a crowd that you always know is up for it?
London.
Yeah.
That's probably our biggest. We've played some of our biggest shows there. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing to go, you know, that far across the world and have people come to your show. So when it's, you know, that many people, it's great. Yeah. But then I think we're playing in Barcelona at Primavera.
Oh yeah. Amazing. Porto, that's a huge lineup.
Those kind of shows are always pretty special.
Yeah. I guess you get exposure to a whole new crowd as well. You get to you try and win over new fans who might not usually go to your shows but are at a festival and then they go past your stage and like, oh, I can't leave.
Yeah.
So that's always exciting.
Yeah,
that's the idea. Yeah.
You had a chance to play some shows this year, or of course some have been cancelled as well. The crowds must be just up for it, having not seen you for a while and you know, not having heard the second record. Where have you been feeling? You've played up in Brisbane, Sydney, all over the country. Are you feeling, you know, is it a bit rusty or is it still getting...
No, like the smooth? The first show we played was Eltham Hotel, which was really fun. But then the next one was like our first proper show, was, you know, like as part of the tour, was at... the Tivoli in Brisbane. And that was just, it just felt so natural straight away. It was just like sinking into an old pair of Chuck Taylors or, you know, like an old jacket or something. It was like, oh, this feels so natural straight away. Awesome. And the crowd just like beaming. You could just see these smiles all the way back because they were just happy to be in a room together watching live music again.
It's, I got a mate who was at that gig he hadn't seen live music for like over 2 years either. He lived in Singapore for 2 years, so didn't see anything. And when he went to your gig, he was just like, this is why I love live music. And he was just so excited to be there. So that's an example of a person in the crowd who was just like beaming.
You could feel that in the room, that vibe. Yeah, it was great. And at the Forum as well. And That was really cool.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, can't wait to not only see you live, see you out on the tour, see you conquering the world once again with this third record, but it's such a great thing to have you back out and doing your thing, as we know you're so good at it. We're going to play Bounce Off the Bottom to finish off the chat. Now, I love this track, and I think I always like the last tracks on albums. I always think like they're important, and sometimes I'll go straight to the last track to sort of see, you know, people read the end of a book, like when Harry Sally, I'll go to the last track of the record to see where it finishes before I go back to the start. But there's some really nice tracks on this. It's got those sort of spoken word lyrics that we know you guys do a bit, and there's some backing vocals, really good backing vocals as well. I'd love to know this song came together, because I think it's just a great way to finish the record.
Yeah, cool. It was always going to be the last track on the record, wasn't it? Like it was sort of as soon as Fran wrote it, and it just was like, yeah, well, that's the last track. It has to be.
Wow.
Yeah, that was just one of those songs that just like fell out. I mean, no, there's like three sort of sections in it, and two of them I was working on this disco song that was never really going to go anywhere. But these two parts just fit together really well. But then I just parked it or just forgot about it. And then I was just sitting on the edge of the couch and I had the idea of bounce off the bottom window in the water, and my hands just fell on these three chords, and then I just immediately fell into those other two sections. I was like, oh, it just like came like lamb shanks off the bone. It just was just like, I don't know if that's a good analogy, but I'll work on that one.
But no,
it was
not
like
bad.
It was like excavating something that was already there. I don't know. It was like, ah, oh, it was just so natural. But then I took it, I think we practiced it like the next day, and we just cycled over the three different sections, like for spent like 20 minutes at a time on the three different sections.
Yeah, right.
And then slowly wrangled them together.
Boiled it down, yeah.
And just in that one practice. And the song pretty much was just unchanged after that, which like some songs just go through all these different phases and they just never really find their feet.
Yeah, okay.
But that one was just natural.
Yeah. Mm. I love hearing the how songs come together, you know, and from a fan or from a listener's point of view, you know, you have no idea a lot of the time, you know, how much work has gone into the, into the songs. Some are the ones that you're working for so long as a musician trying to get them to sound a certain way. Mm. But as a listener, maybe the fact that this one for me just sounded really free, really traditionally you guys, and it just a perfect way to finish the record. But it was great to sort of hear out.
Yeah.
Sort of formated quite organically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sorry, just on the backup vocal, yeah. So Joe's partner Hannah sings backing vocals.
Yeah.
And also Marcel's partner Stella Donnelly.
Yeah.
Sings backing vocals on it as well.
Beautiful. I was going to ask. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's an awesome way to finish off the interview and the record, Bounce Off the Bottom from Rolling Blackouts, Coastal Fever. Congrats on the records, guys. Thanks. Coming into the Tuck Shop to chat. And, good luck with the tours.
Thanks,
Mick. Thanks for having us.